Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're going to dive headfirst into direct potable reuse.
DPR.
DPR, yeah.
Yeah.
Where we're taking treated wastewater and making it safe to drink directly.
Straight from treatment to tap.
No pit stops, no environmental pit stops. And we've got a fascinating research article to guide us today by Jarity and colleagues, hot off the presses from this year.
Yeah, a really hot topic. And this paper really gets into the nitty-gritty of how safe DPR needs to be.
Yeah.
Using quantitative microbial risk assessment, QMRA. It's heady stuff, but really crucial as more and more regions are starting to look at DPR as a solution.
Okay, a QMRA, not exactly a term you hear every day.
Right.
Break it down for me. What are we talking about here?
Well, essentially, imagine playing predict the odds.
Okay.
But with tiny, potentially harmful microorganisms that could sneak through the water treatment process.
Okay.
So QMRA uses data and modeling to estimate the likelihood of someone actually getting sick from those microbes.
So it's like a super-powered risk assessment.
Exactly.
Specifically for those microscopic troublemakers in our water.
Yeah. And this paper zeroes in on California's approach to DPR regulations.
Mm.
You know, I've always been at the forefront of water safety.
Right.
And their history with indirect potable reuse IPR shows just how cautious they are.
California being cautious. Color me shocked. But seriously, how cautious are we talking?
Well, their initial IPR regulations were targeting a 1 in 10,000 LAAS annual risk of infection.
Wow.
That's like winning the lottery.
Yeah.
But not the fun.
Right.
To get there, they looked at worst-case scenarios for common pathogens, like viruses, Giardia, Cryptosporidium, all the things you don't want in your drinking water.
Wow. So they were already setting the bar incredibly high, even with that environmental buffer in IPR. The DPR is a whole different ballgame, right? No room for error if there's contamination.
Yeah, you're catching on quickly. California recognized that with DPR, they needed to shift their focus from annual risk to daily risk.
Okay.
So a short burst of contamination, even if it doesn't significantly impact the annual risk, could still make people sick.
That makes a lot of sense. It's like thinking about food safety. Mm-hmm. Even if you generally eat healthy, one bad meal can still make you sick.
A perfect analogy.
Yeah.
And California took it a step further. They considered not just contamination events, but also the possibility of treatment failures.
Okay.
What happens if, say, the UV disinfection system goes on the fritz?
Right.
So that added layer of caution led them to require even more redundancy in the treatment process, boosting those log reduction values.
LRVs. Remind me again what those are.
Think of LRVs as the amount we need to reduce those pesky pathogens in the water. So the higher the LRV, the more treatment steps, the more safeguards. California basically went for a Fort Knox level security.
Fort Knox for our drinking water. That's a visual I won't soon forget, but I'm sensing there's a butt coming.
There is.
Okay.
Not everyone was on board with just how cautious California was being. The National Water Research Institute, NWRI, put together an expert panel to review those draft DPR regulations.
Mm-hmm.
And they had some serious concerns.
So lay it on me. What did they...
Well, their main takeaway. California might be overdoing it with the caution.
Okay.
Potentially making treatment systems unnecessarily expensive.
Okay, I see where this is going. It's that classic balancing act.
Yeah.
Safety versus cost.
Exactly. And the panel highlighted a couple of areas where they thought California's approach was a bit much.
Okay.
First, using the absolute maximum pathogen concentrations in their calculations, instead of relying on more realistic statistical distributions.
So instead of prepping for a potential drizzle, they're building an ark for a once-in-a-millennium flood.
A bit dramatic.
Okay.
But you get the idea.
Yeah.
The second point of contention was how California handled molecular data, specifically for viruses like norovirus.
Okay.
The panel argued that not all virus particles detected are actually infectious.
So they were counting dead viruses that wouldn't actually pose a threat. That seems excessive.
It does skew the numbers, making those LRVs even higher. The panel argued for a more nuanced, data-driven approach that considers real-world conditions.
I like the sound of that. So what did they propose instead?
They came up with a couple of alternative frameworks, options that aim to hit that sweet spot between safety and feasibility.
Okay.
One is called the 97.4th percentile approach.
Okay, that sounds a little intimidating. What does that even mean?
It's less complicated than it sounds,
yeah.
I promise.
Yeah.
Basically, this approach suggests basing LRVs on the pathogen levels we see 97.4% of the time.
Okay.
We acknowledge that contamination happens,
uh-huh.
But we're focusing on those more frequent, less extreme events.
So instead of building that arc, we're making sure we have a sturdy umbrella.
A good way to think about it. And importantly, this framework still allows for some flexibility. Utilities can operate below those LRVs for short periods. recognizing that occasional fluctuations are inevitable.
Flexibility is key. What's the other option on the table?
The maximum concentration approach. This one acknowledges that those extreme events, however rare, can occur.
Right.
So it uses the highest measured pathogen levels to set those LRVs. It's still playing it safe, but with a more realistic view of those worst-case scenarios.
So we're making sure we can handle the big storms, but not necessarily building for a tsunami every time.
Exactly. Both of these alternative frameworks offer a balanced approach.
Okay.
But they rely on real-world data, not just theoretical models.
Speaking of real-world data, where did they get the information to back all of this up?
That's where the DPR2 project comes in. Pexon and colleagues did this massive study collecting data on pathogen levels in raw wastewater from multiple sites over a long period.
Wow.
It's a treasure trove of information that helps ground these frameworks in reality.
So they're not just pulling numbers out of a hat.
Right.
They're basing these frameworks on what's actually happening in the wastewater we're dealing with.
Precisely. This data is crucial for understanding the real risks and developing regulations that are both protective and practical.
This is all incredibly fascinating, but I have to ask, is focusing solely on LRVs a bit limiting? Is there more to this story than just those numbers?
You're absolutely right. LRVs are just one piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to think about a system's tolerance for those inevitable hiccups. Those moments when treatment effectiveness might dip below the ideal.
Okay. Tolerance. I like the sound of that. It sounds a lot more forgiving than just fixating on those big, scary LRVs.
It is about designing systems that can handle those fluctuations without compromising safety. Think of it as a built-in safety net.
Okay, so how do we build that safety net? How do we measure and ensure that tolerance you're talking about?
Robust, real-time monitoring is key. You know, we can't just set those LRVs and hope for the best. We need to be constantly checking those critical control points in the treatment process, looking for any signs of trouble.
So imagine sensors throughout the system, like those smoke detectors in our homes.
Right.
Always on the lookout for any hint of danger.
That's the idea. Early detection is everything. If we can catch problems quickly, we can respond faster. Maybe tweak the treatment process, temporarily divert the water flow, or even issue public notifications if needed.
Multiple layers of protection, not just relying on a single line of defense. I like that approach. It's like having a seatbelt and airbags in your car.
Yeah.
You hope you never need them, but they're there just in case.
An excellent analogy. And this emphasis on real-time monitoring is part of a larger trend in the water sector. We're seeing more and more use of sensors and data analytics
right.
to optimize operations, improve efficiency, and of course, protect public health.
So the whole field is getting smarter, more connected, and hopefully safer as a result. That's reassuring. But I'm curious about something with all this talk about real-time monitoring and rapid response. How does that idea of giving utilities a choice, basing LRVs on raw versus treated wastewater, fit in?
Yeah, that's where things get a bit tricky. On the one hand, that flexibility can be a good thing. You know, it recognizes that different utilities have different starting points.
Right.
Some might already have certain treatment technologies in place.
So it's about tailoring the regulations to fit the unique circumstances of each utility.
Exactly. But as you hinted at earlier, this flexibility also raises some thorny questions.
Yeah.
How do we ensure consistency and fairness across those different options?
Right. It can't be like having different sets of rules for different players in the same game. That wouldn't be fair.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why it's so crucial to have clear guidelines and criteria for each option. They need to be truly equivalent in terms of risk to public health.
Mm.
And that requires rigorous analysis, robust data, and ongoing monitoring to make sure everyone is playing by the same rules.
It's like having a referee who keeps the game fair, even if the teams are using different strategies.
Precisely. And to ensure that fairness, those specific numbers we've been talking about, the LRVs, become even more important.
Right. We were talking about targeting that 97.4th percentile for one of those approaches. Why that specific number? What's the logic behind it?
Well, this is where it gets interesting. Remember, we're dealing with statistical distributions.
Yeah.
Ranges of possible pathogen levels. It's not just about picking the highest number and calling it a day.
So it's about finding that point within the range that represents an acceptable level of risk, right?
Exactly. And the researchers behind this paper did some incredible work to determine where that point should be. They explored several options, even using the maximum concentration from those statistical distributions. But ultimately, they landed on that 97.4th percentile.
Why that specific percentile? What makes it so special?
The reason is fascinating. It all comes down to ensuring consistency between those two options. We talked about basing LRVs on raw versus treated wastewater. They found that by targeting the 97.4th percentile, they could achieve a level of protection comparable to what's already required in existing regulations for treated wastewater. It's like finding that common denominator that allows for flexibility without compromising fairness.
So we're bridging those two worlds, creating a system where both options can exist side by side without sacrificing safety.
That's the goal. And it highlights the level of thought and detail that goes into crafting these DPR regulations. They're not arbitrary. They're built on a foundation of science data and a deep understanding of risk.
All of this is giving me a new appreciation for the complexities of DPR, that's for sure. But you've been talking a lot about enterovirus and norovirus. What about those other nasty bugs that can lurk in wastewater? Are we adequately addressing those in these frameworks?
That's a great question. Wastewater is a complex ecosystem, and we need to be sure we're covering all the bases, so to speak.
Right.
Both frameworks include specific LRV requirements for Giardia and Cryptosporidium.
Right, those protozoan parasites that can cause some serious stomach issues. We've talked about those before. They're tough to eliminate. But what about other bacteria or even things like antimicrobial resistance genes? Those are getting a lot of attention these days.
You're hitting on some important points. The world of wastewater pathogens is constantly evolving and new threats can emerge. But research suggests that by effectively controlling those key indicator organisms, viruses, Giardia, and Cryptosporidium, we're likely controlling a whole host of other microorganisms along the way.
So it's like having a robust security system that, while not specifically designed to catch every single potential intruder, is strong enough to keep the vast majority out.
A good analogy. If we can knock out those tough-to-kill pathogens, we're likely addressing a whole range of other potential problems at the same time.
Okay, that's reassuring. But with all this talk about statistical distributions and percentiles, something else has been on my mind. Should we be explicitly considering outbreak scenarios when setting these DPR regulations? We know those events can cause major spikes in pathogen levels in wastewater.
That's an incredibly important point.
Yeah.
And the researchers behind this paper don't shy away from it. They acknowledge that outbreaks can throw a wrench in the system, potentially pushing pathogen levels far beyond those typical ranges we've been discussing.
And we saw that play out in real time during the COVID-19 pandemic. Wastewater became this incredibly valuable tool for tracking the spread of the virus.
It's exactly. Wastewater surveillance proved to be an invaluable early warning system, and not just for COVID-19. Studies have shown similar patterns with other pathogens, like norovirus during outbreaks. Those events can really change the game.
So how do we factor that into DPR regulations? Do we need to build in bigger safety margins to account for those potential spikes in pathogen levels during outbreaks?
That's the million-dollar question, and there's no easy answer. The researchers suggest that instead of relying solely on treatment redundancy, those extra LRVs, we should focus on strengthening the lines of communication between public health officials and water utilities.
So it's about working together, sharing information, and coordinating responses, rather than just building bigger, more expensive treatment systems. Kind of like a neighborhood watch program, but for public health.
Exactly. If public health officials detect an outbreak, they can alert the water utility, who can then take appropriate action. That might involve temporarily diverting the DPR water, increasing monitoring, or even issuing public notifications. It's all about being proactive and adaptable.
It's like having a coordinated defense system where different agencies work together to protect the community.
Precisely. And this approach acknowledges that outbreaks are dynamic events requiring a dynamic response. But the researchers go even further, suggesting that wastewater monitoring itself could evolve into a proactive public health tool.
Wait, are you saying we could use wastewater data to actually predict and manage outbreaks before they even happen?
That's the idea. Imagine a future where we're constantly monitoring wastewater for signs of emerging pathogens, giving us a head start on containing outbreaks before they spiral out of control.
That's incredible. Wastewater, the unlikely hero of public health. It's amazing how something we often think of as waste could hold the key to protecting our communities.
It really speaks to the interconnectedness of things, doesn't it? What we do in one area can have ripple effects in others. And that's a theme that keeps coming up in this discussion of DPR regulations. It's not just about water treatment. It's about understanding those complex interactions between public health technology, economics, and even human behavior.
I'm starting to realize just how much goes into those decisions about how we manage and treat our water. It's a lot more nuanced and multifaceted than I ever imagined. But speaking of nuances, we haven't talked about those dose response models you mentioned earlier. Can you remind me what those are and why they matter in this whole DPR conversation?
Ah, yes. Dose response models. They're the unsung heroes of risk assessment. They're essentially mathematical equations that describe the relationship between the dose of a pathogen someone's exposed to and the likelihood of them actually getting sick.
So if a pathogen has a very sensitive dose response model, meaning even a tiny amount can make you sick, that would lead to stricter LRV requirements.
Exactly. And the researchers behind this paper took that into consideration. They carefully chose the most conservative dose response models available for each pathogen in these frameworks. It's all about erring on the side of caution.
Safety first, as they say. But with all this emphasis on caution and conservatism, I have to wonder, are we potentially shooting ourselves in the foot? Could this intense focus on safety actually hinder the adoption of DPR, making it seem too complex or expensive?
That's a legitimate concern.
Yeah.
And it's something the NWRI expert panel brought up when they critiqued California's approach. They argued that overly conservative regulations could lead to unnecessarily expensive and complex treatment systems, potentially making DPR a less attractive option for water-stressed communities.
There's that balancing act, again, safety versus feasibility.
Yeah.
We need to protect public health, but not to the point where it becomes a roadblock to implementing this potentially life-saving technology.
Exactly. It's a delicate balance, and it requires careful consideration of both the science and the economics. We need to be sure we're not building Fort Knox, when a well-designed, well-monitored fence would suffice.
So how do we find that sweet spot? How do we ensure we're protecting public health without pricing DPR out of reach?
That's the ongoing challenge. And it's where continuous research, data collection, and technological advancements come into play. As we gain a better understanding of these pathogens, their behavior, and how they respond to treatment, we can refine those LRVs and potentially reduce the need for excessive redundancy.
So it's all about using science and data to make those regulations smarter and more efficient over time.
Precisely. And it's a collaborative process that involves scientists, engineers, regulators, and the public. We all have a role to play in ensuring the DPR is a safe, sustainable, and affordable solution for the future.
Well said. This deep dive has really opened my eyes to the intricate world of DPR.
Hmm.
It's so much more than just treating water. It's about balancing competing priorities, embracing innovation, and making informed decisions that affect entire communities. But before we wrap up, there's one more piece of this puzzle we need to examine. It's something the researchers touch on in their paper, and it has to do with how we credit those different treatment processes.
You're talking about LRV crediting. That's a critical aspect of DPR regulations.
Exactly. It's about determining how much each treatment step contributes to that overall pathogen reduction. And I have a feeling it's a lot more complicated than just adding up some numbers.
You are absolutely right.
Yeah.
LRV crediting is crucial because it directly influences the design cost and complexity of DPR systems. And it's an area where those alternative frameworks we discussed, the different approaches to setting those baseline LRVs, can really shake things up.
This just keeps getting more and more interesting. I can't wait to unpack this LRV crediting thing. But before we get into the nitty-gritty, let's take a quick, all right, let's unpack this whole LRV crediting thing. It sounds pretty technical, but I'm sensing it's a key player in this world of DPR regulations.
You're spot on. LRV crediting is all about assigning value to each step in the treatment process.
Okay.
Like figuring out how many points each player on a basketball team contributes to the final score.
Okay, I like that analogy.
Yeah.
So if each treatment step is a player on our team, how do we decide who gets the MVP award, the most LRV credit?
It's all about performance. We have to look at the data, see how effective each treatment process is at removing or inactivating those specific pathogens we're worried about. Rigorous testing is key.
So no guesswork here. We need hard evidence to back up those LRV credits.
Exactly. And this is where those alternative frameworks we discussed, the 97.4th percentile and maximum concentration approaches, can really change the game.
Okay. Remind me how those frameworks impact LRV crediting.
Well, remember, those frameworks have different starting points for setting those baseline LRVs.
Yeah.
One focuses on those more frequent contamination levels, the other on those extreme but rare events.
Right.
That difference in risk tolerance directly affects how much heavy lifting each treatment step needs to do.
So if we're aiming for a higher baseline LRV, each treatment process has to work harder to meet that target, maybe requiring more complex technology or multiple layers of redundancy.
You got it. But here's where things get really interesting. The article points out that sometimes regulations can be overly conservative in how they assign LRV credit.
Overly conservative. What do you mean by that?
Often regulations use the lower bounds of observed treatment performance, like the fifth percentile. It's like assuming that star basketball player will only make 5% of their shots, even though they usually sink way more.
That seems a bit unfair to the player and probably leads to some bad calls by the referees.
Exactly. And in the world of DPR, this overly cautious approach can create an LRV deficit. The treatment processes are actually performing better than the regulations give them credit for.
So we're potentially overbuilding and overspending on treatment because of this worst-case scenario thinking.
Precisely. It's an inefficiency that can make DPR seem less appealing and less affordable, especially for communities with limited resources.
This is really making me think about the real-world consequences of these regulations. We can't just focus on safety in a vacuum. We have to consider the economic and practical implications, too.
Absolutely. And that's why this whole discussion about LRV crediting is so important. We need to move away from those worst-case assumptions and embrace a more data-driven approach. Let's give those treatment processes the credit they deserve.
So instead of just relying on the lowest possible performance, we should be constantly evaluating how those treatment processes are actually performing using real-time data to fine-tune those LRV credits.
Exactly. It's about making the system smarter, more responsive, and more reflective of reality. And this is where technology can really shine. Advanced sensors, real-time monitoring, and data analytics can give us a much clearer picture of how each treatment step is contributing.
It's like having that team of statisticians analyzing every play in the game, giving us a more accurate assessment of each player's contribution to the final score.
A perfect analogy. And by embracing this dynamic, data-driven approach to LRV crediting, we can optimize those DPR systems, making them more efficient, more affordable, and ultimately more accessible to communities facing water challenges.
This has been an amazing deep dive. We've covered so much ground from the Colorado River crisis and the intricacies of QMRA to those alternative frameworks and the complexities of LRV crediting.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey. And for me, it really highlights how DPR is not a one-size-fits-all solution. It's a constantly evolving field that requires us to think critically about risk, science, technology, and economics.
You've said it before, and I think it bears repeating. It's all about balance. We need to find that sweet spot between protecting public health and ensuring DPR is a viable, sustainable solution.
We can't forget about public perception. Building trust and transparency is absolutely essential if we want to see wider adoption of DPR. People need to understand the science, the safety measures, and the potential benefits.
It's about having those open and honest conversations, addressing concerns, and showing that DPR is not some scary futuristic concept, but a carefully designed, rigorously monitored solution to a very real problem.
Well said. And as this research shows, with thoughtful regulation, robust monitoring, and ongoing scientific advancements, DPR holds incredible promise for a future where everyone has access to clean, safe water.
That's a future I think we can all get behind. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the fascinating world of direct potable reuse. Keep those questions coming, keep exploring, and most importantly, stay thirsty for knowledge.